group discussions, they're kind of like check-ins, where you can either ask questions, but mostly what happens is people talk a little bit about what's happening with them in their meditation, and then I can comment on it, and then if questions arise, comment on the questions, and if people have things that they've been working on and somebody else has been working on the same kind of thing, it's often helpful to exchange notes on, you know, what you've been doing. So how is everybody?
I'm doing well.
Good. And what's happening with people in your practice?
So, as I said at the community meeting a few days ago, it's kind of an exciting time for me, and so my mind is also excited by all this activity. Carl has done a good job, I think, of keeping me in line on this trip with all these geeky gadgets and stuff, you know, cameras and cords and streaming and internet websites. My mind has gone a little bit bonkers. Sitting down in meditation cushion and thinking of different ways to do things and different ways to film and store and distribute them.
Okay, so this is a question about, or a check-in about distraction. Okay? Yeah, so even sometimes when you're doing some Dharma work, you know, in your case, figuring out how to record and film and stream the Dharma teachings and get them out to people, it can definitely intrude on meditation. Yeah? And so my guess is probably everybody in the retreat is having one, if not more, persistent themes that are intruding on their meditation. Yeah? You know, sometimes for variety you might, you know, think about this or that or other distractions. But often, you know, there's a few principal ones. So, you know, yours was the streaming one and, you know, videoing, and other people may have other ones. Sometimes it's kind of this kind of thing of planning, you know, something with all your widgets. Sometimes it's an issue of attachment, sometimes an issue of anger. You might be daydreaming about somebody that you just want to be with them, or you might be remembering something that happened a long time ago and be upset about it. But sometimes there's a few persistent kind of things that come. Are people seeing that? So what kind of things are the persistent ones that are knocking on your door? Yeah?
What I'm going to make.
Okay, so yours is what you're going to make for lunch. Well, you know what? Everybody else is thinking about that too. They're wondering what you're going to make for lunch. So maybe what you should do is just have assign a different person each day to think about what you should make for lunch, and then just make that, and then you don't have to think about it. That would help her out a lot, wouldn't it? You know? Everybody just figure out, assign a person different days, you know, and then you figure out what the recipe is, and because then she won't have to think about it in her meditation. Yeah. Then she'll get to think about something else, some other distraction. What else is coming up?
Well, I've been letting go of Sergeant Joy's effort, which has been really, really hard. You know, looking at what everybody's doing and how they're doing it, and are they doing it correctly or are they not doing it correctly. And it's exhausting. So that was most of the distraction. She's finally, I think she's on, she's starting to figure out that she's on a little bit of a leave of absence. The place is, like Carl said, you know, the place is going to burn down, the place is going to fall apart. And so, but what I've been looking at is my distraction, just this compulsive thinking, this compulsive worrying, this compulsive making judgments about how things are going. And but as the week has gone on, I've been telling them in the community that sometimes I actually have to physically leave the house. I have to say something or write a note. I have to go outside, I have to take a walk or go to the barn or go take a picture or something, because I just refuse to you know, I really want to be able to just relax and just let go. To see my mind and how it just can't control itself, and that the distraction itself is, I mean, I've been spending a lot of time just not getting that the story going, the planning, the what's going to happen, who's got altar road, who's got shore, who's doing what. Mm-hmm. And so the distraction has just been the compulsiveness of that kind of thinking, which is, I'm sure, is certainly prior to Sergeant Joy's effort. But, and as the week has gone on, because I have been so vigilant at it, is that I can see how much. But you had told me that part of my physical exhaustion is this mental compulsive thinking. And since I've been backing off and really, really quieting down, it's amazing how clear my mind is getting, and how relaxed my mind is getting, and how at peace my mind is getting, because I don't have all this, like, compulsive thinking about, you know, what to do. And but it's still around.
Okay.
It's the compulsive behavior.
Yeah. So when you're talking about the compulsive thinking and the compulsive behavior, are you talking more about this thing of wanting to control the environment and everybody in it and make sure they're all doing the right thing? Are you talking about that in particular, or more that the compulsive thinking just takes any subject and just goes on and on and on and on about it?
I think that's what I'm discovering, is that it's not externally driven. It's internally starts, and then it finds an object.
Okay. So it's internal, and then it's just whatever happens to come by. Uh-huh. And what everybody is doing at the Avenue, making sure that they're right, is Sergeant Joyous Effort's forte.
Yeah. But to find out that it's the thinking that's part of, is where it starts, is the inside, and that it just finds an object, is what I'm discovering this week. It's not the other way around.
Right. It's not that everything's happening in the environment, and so you have to, that distracts you. It's, you're looking for something in the environment that will take up your mental energy.
And there's a lot of mental energy. So, you know, my hope is that I can then turn it into, I've been really wanting to sort of, the self-generation part of the silence. I said, you can put all that wonderful energy into thinking about emptiness.
Right.
Thinking about reappearing as the medicine will.
Yeah.
Use all of that wonderful energy and put it towards something virtuous rather than something that's compulsive.
Right. Yeah, so when you're pulling back and disciplining the mind, not letting it run around to all the objects, other objects, then you have so much energy to put into your practice. And then that practice is not only, let's say, doing the meditation on the medicine Buddha, but it's also what you think about in your break time and where your mind goes in your break time. And then that helps, because when you keep your mind in the Dharma in the break time, then when you go back and you sit on the cushion, it's much easier to get into the sadhana.
And when I find myself starting to think about external, you know, going that way, I just call on the medicine Buddha to give me a hand to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just come back to putting him on my head so that he's there with me in my heart, and that just sort of refocuses my energy.
Okay, so you're finding, I'm repeating some of this for the people, you know. So you're finding that when you find your mind start going outside, if you just remember the medicine Buddha, put him in your heart, put him on your head, and that helps you to remember what you're supposed to be doing in this moment, which isn't all the compulsive thinking about whatever you happen to be getting distracted about.
And it's really been helpful, because the fact that I've been able to calm my mind enough sufficiently, the clarity gives me the opportunity that, like, if I can cut it off soon enough, that clarity brings me right. I have a visualization of him immediately in my heart.
Yeah.
Because it's so much clearer. It's not filled with all of this words and thinking and pictures.
Yeah.
That tends to be in my mind most of the time.
Yeah. So the less distraction that you have, the clearer your visualization.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the more of a feeling you get for the practice.
Which in November when I did this practice, I had hardly any feeling because I had so much going on in my mind.
Yeah.
Noticeable.
So you're seeing the difference. Yay! How about other people? Yeah.
I've been looking a lot with attachment. I was kind of having trouble with my dreams this last while.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized at some point that I was attached to them in a way that wasn't healthy. They had become unhealthy. And so I just decided to think about it differently. And I'm just doing this thing during the day where I prepare my mind. It seems to be quite helpful. And a lot of it's just this intention that whatever reaction I have, whatever thoughts I have, because I can't really control those, is just as soon as I can, move it to something, actually move it to loving kindness. Just try to surround things with loving kindness. And I've kind of taken the pressure off of well, first on my dreams, I just don't think about them in the morning as much. I'm just kind of like, okay, they're very vivid, but I just don't pay any attention. There's not enough content there that's helpful to my life. So I just go into, you know, the prayers that we do in the morning instead.
Mm-hmm.
And just making that shift because it wasn't, I think that was being so good. And I think, and then just trying to surround things and give myself the space to allow my reactions that I really don't want to have, but they're there, and just as soon as I can move to something more positive.
Mm-hmm.
That's being helpful. It's kind of more realistic for me. But I don't have good reaction. I don't, you know, I'm not satisfied with my reactions.
Yeah.
I've decided, the one thing I've read that's been really helpful is that Geshe Sopa said that the Buddha only talked about your experience in terms of karma. And so I've been thinking, like, all my experience really is like the wheel of sharp weapons. I really have to take that my reactions, everything that I experience is based on my previous karma and this thing of what does it mean that it's ripening. And so I can't really control that. All I can do is deal with it and create the causes instead of putting all this pressure on myself and getting dissatisfied with my initial reactions a lot of times to things.
Okay. Let me talk a little bit here and see what happens to us, the environments that we find ourselves in, the situations that we find ourselves in, those are due to ripenings of karma. Sometimes there's a karmic component to the ripening of our reaction in the sense that if we've done an action repeatedly in the past, there's the karma to keep on doing it. But our reaction in the present to a ripening of karma, our reaction is the karma, the actual action that plants seeds in our mind that will influence what happens in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that so often we are reacting instead of acting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something happens and when we're on automatic, we react to it without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then that creates more and more karma, you know. Sometimes if we've thought about, you know, if we've trained our mind in loving kindness or in some kind of positive thought, that can be a reaction too. It's so familiar, you know. But so often our reactions are things that it's just you know, our usual same old,
mm-hmm.
you know, like push button. You know, somebody looks at me this way, I get angry. Somebody looks at me this way and I get happy. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, just our old emotions reacting and things like that. And a lot of times, like you mentioned your dreams and not being satisfied with your dreams or your dreams disturbing you in your life. And, you know, and then realizing that you're putting too much energy into trying to figure your dreams out. And they're only dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? They're only dreams. So I usually in retreat, people will have all sorts of dreams. Any of you having all sorts of dreams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very, very common. Okay? Whenever you're in a thing of retreat or doing a lot of purification, sometimes a lot of stuff comes out in your dreams. Sometimes you may have good dreams. Sometimes you will have dreams that are totally off the wall, you know. And sometimes you will be, you know, people will be attacking you in dreams, or sometimes you will be attacking them in dreams. The thing to do with your dreams is, if in a dream you're doing something non-virtuous, when you wake up in the morning, just realize that, oh, I was doing something non-virtuous in a dream. You know, I don't want to do that. That's not a type of thinking or, that I want to have. It's not a type of action. I just don't want to go there. Anyway, it was a dream, so it wasn't a full action. What creates the karma is how you respond to it when you wake up. So it's just, okay, that happened. Let it go. I don't want to do that in waking life. You know, and I'm not going to sit there and, like, ruminate about, you know, why was this monster chasing me all night, you know. It was like, okay, that's a ripening of karma. It's worth, you know, 3 eons in the hell realms. He can chase me all night, and then I'm done with those 3 eons in the hell realms, and it's okay, you know. Now, if it's like, okay, well, I'm chasing the monster and I have all these weapons and I keep killing him and killing him. Well, I don't want to kill any living beings, you know. Okay, so I regret having the impulse to kill, yeah, when I wake up. But, you know, I'm not going to go and, you know, just drop it after that. Yeah, it's just not worth it. Okay, so the thing is just... The basic thing about dreams is interpret them in a way that helps your Dharma practice. It isn't like dreams have an inherently existent meaning there that you're trying to find out. You interpret things in a way that help your Dharma practice. In the same way as what's going on in our life, people say things and do things, and we interpret them in a way that helps our Dharma practice. Otherwise, we interpret them in a way that helps our anger, and we get angry. You know, whether somebody did something or didn't do something, we can still get angry. Yeah, so the idea is training the mind to help, to interpret things in a way that is beneficial for developing the kinds of mindsets that we want to have. And this regards our dreams and regards daily life. Like even in daily life, you know, let's say somebody comes up to you and... You know, and they, you know for sure because they've told you, I have a bad motivation and I'm angry and I'm trashing you. So they really had a bad motivation and they're trashing you. So you know for sure they had a bad motivation. Still, you have the choice at that moment to interpret it in a way that helps your Dharma practice. And dwelling on the fact that this person had a bad motivation, you know, and really wants to hurt you, that does not help your Dharma practice. So... Or you say, oh, they had a bad motivation and they wanted to hurt me. Wow, that poor person, they're really suffering and they're creating negative karma by doing this. And I don't want them to create that negative karma and I don't want them to have that kind of suffering that they're having now by having such, you know, anger towards me. You know, so, you know, you accept that maybe they want to hurt you. But the way you interpret that, the way you react to that in a way is a way that helps your own Dharma practice instead of the usual old way of, well, they have a bad intention to me, so I'm going to have a bad intention to them. Pop in the nose, you know. So instead of that, it's, you know, okay, they have a bad intention to me. They're suffering right now. They're creating cause for more suffering. They're an object of compassion. Okay? So whatever happens, you want to react to it and train your mind to respond to it in a way that helps you develop the kind of qualities that you want to develop. Yeah? And is also more realistic. Yeah? Because we say, well, if somebody wanted to hurt me, then it's justified to get angry. Well, why? Why is it justified to get angry? Or somebody say, I've got to get angry. My anger is going to help me. Anger is beneficial. Why? How's your anger beneficial? Yeah? So to look at some of these automatic responses and challenge them a bit. Is that helping?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that
you're talking about.
It's very consistent. I think it's hard for me to see is the what it feels like, and maybe it's just that it's too automatic. It feels like there's not really choice in the reaction.
Mm.
There's only, and that I can work with it. But it's still, I just think that the emotional energy is so strong that it always feels like the antidotes are weak and I just have to come at it all these different ways. And then if I get confused, just do breathing.
Yeah.
Right. Be on the lookout for doubt.
Okay.
Undermines me. You know? And so it doesn't seem like, that just seems like my process. That's how it goes.
Okay, so you're saying that your emotional reactions to things come very, very quickly.
Yeah, and the power of them doesn't just let up. I can think these things, these antidotes, but the emotional stream is just like, you know, I don't know if I said that to you once, but you know that little light that Wendell gave, that little beautiful light that made the fan?
Oh, yeah.
That's my good... things that I'm working with, but it's fighting against like a hurricane.
Uh-huh.
So it's inside, you know?
Okay.
It's like I've got these antidotes and these things I'm using, but like the force of what they're going against, they aren't going to like just change it like dying.
Yeah.
You know, I use that thought to help myself to be more positive, to realize that you can change your thoughts in a moment. They just don't always happen to change in a moment.
Yeah. I mean, you can change your thought in a moment. The thing is that when things are very habitual and when they're strong, we can change them in the moment, but then they come back in the next moment.
Yeah.
Okay?
Find that one moment of work.
Yeah. So you just keep on calling that one moment back up. Yeah, and it takes time. I mean, I think everybody works with that because when we have strong habitual emotional reactions, it's going to take a time to undo that habit. It's like, you know, any bad habit we have, it takes time to undo it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we just keep chipping away at it and don't get discouraged just because it doesn't vanish instantly.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing my work, when I was new into the work I went into, I used to sometimes feel like, God, this day was just so crappy, you know. And then I would look at the patient load, and I would analyze, you know, they're like, say I saw 15 people. And what had happened was one of those interactions was not so good. Three were neutral, and the rest were good. But I take that one and it colors my day.
Yep.
And this is exactly what I do with
yep.
my responses. Because I actually did that same analysis. I looked at my, and I've been doing it lately, I look at my day, there's one small little thing that I let color it. Mm-hmm. And actually so many other things in the day were really, really good.
Yeah.
And many were neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I let that one thing color it. And so that's what mm-hmm. I've been trying to be more aware of and just
right.
not let that
right.
happen.
And that kind of, what you're saying about letting one small thing color the whole day, that's kind of relating to what she's saying about her compulsive thinking. Because
mm-hmm.
this is like just latching onto one thing
mm-hmm.
and saying that's the reality of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of
blowing it up.
Misery making.
Yes.
Unnecessary.
Definitely misery making. I think you have a lot of company in that misery. Yeah.
I find that exact same thing also with my dream. I have to be very careful to not let the feeling that I carry with me from my dream and let it color the day. Like, if I wake up and I've had a terrible dream and I grasp onto that, and then that can, if I run with that, my day is shot.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be very careful.
Yeah.
I don't like dreams because of that reason. But if they're good, then I have to wake up to them from them, and I hate that. And then if they're bad, I'm stuck in them, and then it seems like forever. So I never really relate very well to them. But I had a dream where, like, the first day of retreat, I think, where I was, like, breaking my precepts. But it wasn't about breaking my precepts. It was just about, you know, sex and drugs. It had nothing to do with precepts. It was just about that, you know. The precepts weren't even a thought, and then it came into my mind like spontaneously that I was breaking my precepts
in the dream.
In the dream.
That's good.
And so I tried to counteract it in the dream. I like visualized Tenra Z, and then I was like, "Well, I think I'm gonna go back to the defilement." I figured that was all right, though. It was better than, you know, just not ever thinking of it. But but then I came to the idea of actually purifying that in the practice. Is that suitable? I mean, I don't normally dwell on it at all. But if I'm like in the hall and that I remember that, then I just go ahead and purify anything that I did in the dream.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, if you're doing something non-virtuous in a dream, purify it, you know, confess it, purify it, even though it's not something you actually did, confess it, purify it, and then let it go. Don't keep it in your mind and tussle with it and react to it and proliferate about it. Yeah. But if you're dreaming and in the middle of your dream that you realize you're breaking a precept, that's quite good, you know. Yeah. And His Holiness always says that even in his dreams, he's a monk, you know. So there's always that remembrance, even in your dreams. So that's what you want to cultivate. And what you can do is whatever you're dreaming about, and you think of Chenrezig, and then you say, oh, I want to go back to that. Have them all change into Chenrezig. No, it's a very good meditation technique. If you're getting distracted in your meditation, some object of attachment just is coming up again and again, or some object of anger is coming again and again and again, just make the whole thing explode into a million Chenrezigs, you know? Or make the person that you're having a lot of attachment or resentment for, make them into Chenrezig, you know? And you're not going to have lust and anger towards Chenrezig.
I have a question about the 35 Buddhas practice. I was doing it and I was having some anger towards some people. And so I was purifying that, and I, you know, they say in the practice to put them in front of you as you're prostrating. And it wasn't really helping me at all to do anything for my anger for them. I was just looking at the backs of their heads. What's the point of this? So I kind of imagined that they were sitting looking back at me. Is that all right?
Okay, so it says when you're prostrating or when you're taking refuge or whatever, to put the people that you're upset with or the people you don't like in front of you. The idea being that to look at the Buddhas, you have to see those people. Yeah? And here you are having all those animosity feelings. Animosity, what's the adjective for animosity?
Hostile.
Okay, all those hostile feelings. All those hostile feelings towards somebody and in the presence of the Buddha. Well, that's going to make you, I don't want to have bad feelings towards somebody in the presence of the Buddha. That's not really what I want to do, you know. So it kind of helps you. That's a good kind of shame, you know, kind of like, oh, I don't want to do that. So it reminds you, to try and drop the anger. Yeah, you were saying that just looking at the back of their heads while you're prostrating was making you angry. And they weren't even in the room. Yeah, probably good. Who knows what would have happened then? So because you were finding that just thinking about them was revving you up, that you had them in your imagination sit down somewhere. That's fun.
No, I actually... It wasn't revving me up. It just wasn't doing anything.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't, like, affecting me emotionally at all. So I just had them turn around and sit down facing back at me so that I was actually prostrating to the Buddhas, but in their direction.
Oh, I see. So the people were still in front of you, only you were seeing their faces instead of the back of their heads.
I feel that hurt my pride, like, a lot, because then it was like, it was kind of, yeah.
Oh, okay. So. I get what you're saying. So then instead of them in front of you, you're all prostrating the Buddha together, then they turned around and faced you and you were prostrating to them as if saying, I'm sorry for getting so angry at you. That's fine. Yeah. You ever felt that way? Like you need to apologize to people you get angry at because you realize your anger is really uncalled for?
It's a really hard time apologizing, you know. If my pride really gets in the way, let me just say I'm sorry. It's really, really difficult. I tend to what I do is it's a little bit more subtle. It's like I'll do something nice for them. In my mind, that's how I do the apology as a hand of kindness. But they don't know that. They're probably more confused then because I was angry at them being kind and they don't know what's going on. But it's very hard for me to apologize.
Yes. So you're finding that saying the words to somebody, I'm sorry, is really difficult for you. Might be a good thing to practice doing. See. I can just see it tomorrow morning. There's going to be little notes on everybody's face. I'm joking. How about everybody else? What's happening? Yeah.
I noticed, Venerable, that during breathing meditation, it's just chaos. I can see part of it is that I actually stopped doing anything just to get to the Abbey, and that stopped when I sat down on the plane seat. So the month of December was this huge rush, you know, with school, with putting stuff into storage, and then Christmas, and then going back to clean the apartment. And truly, so I stopped on the plane seat, not from the office, under, you know, I could rest. So right now what I'm noticing is that breathing meditation is just this constant dialogue. And so I tell myself, okay, you know, stop, right now, stop. And then I think, I've got it. And then 2 seconds later, it's like... So I'm trying to be patient now because I can see that, you know, this train came to a stop, but this momentum, you know, I'm just inside and hope.
Yeah.
But do you have suggestions?
Yeah. Okay. So when there's just a lot of chatter going on in the mind, I think it's good to just say stop. But it's like when you say stop, you can't think that just stopping, saying stop, is going to last for a long time. You stop, and in each moment, you're stopping. Do you understand what I mean? So it's not just, okay, I'm bringing myself back to the breath right now. Now that I've brought myself back, then I just can let my mind go again. As I brought myself back, let's really renew my mindfulness of the breath and pay more attention to the breath right now. Because sometimes we bring ourselves back, but we don't renew the mindfulness on the object of meditation. Yeah? So you've got to bring yourself back and renew the mindfulness. Some people find it easier to develop concentration on a visualized image. If that's the case for you, just do maybe, you know, a little bit of breathing, 5 or 10, you know, minutes just to calm the mind down, or 21 breaths or whatever you want to do, and then go to the image of the Buddha. And sometimes for some people holding the image of, but in this case the medicine Buddha, is it's their mind is more attracted to the image of the medicine Buddha than it is to the breath, so it becomes easier to stay on that image than it does on the breath. Yeah. So some people are, you know, people are really different regarding that.
Can I ask one more thing?
Sure.
So when, obviously my parents are concerned for me right now, is it all right in the practice to just have them right there and send the light to them?
Sure.
And that's what I've been doing because, well, I wasn't sure if that was the best thing to do, but it seems to be the right thing to do since their needs are so huge in there.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just don't forget I'll send him beings.
No, but I do that.
Yeah.
Do I say all sending beings or do I say people with those particular challenges?
I think you say all sentient beings, and in this session maybe I'll focus on people with particular challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of letting your mind just go round and around and around about your parents, because why are you focusing on your parents when there's so many other beings who have that same challenge?
I'm acquainted with their struggle, so I do try and include other people, but it's like, yeah, well, that's a good question.
So think about that a little bit. Yeah? Think about that a bit. Yeah? So you don't want to block people we know that we care about out of our mind and their struggles. But we don't want their struggles to monopolize our mind, because then we aren't able to break out and really practice, because all we're basically doing is worrying on a meditation cushion. Yeah? So, you know, if you're worrying a lot, it's good to have that person with medicine Buddha on their head and everything like that. But it's like you've also got to practice really enlarging the scope, you know. And they have that problem. But, you know, and you love your parents now, but, you know, they haven't always been your parents and they aren't always going to be your parents. Yeah, and everybody else who's sitting in this room has been your parent. Yeah. So you want to also kind of try to stretch the mind a bit, so we don't just get so focused on the problems and troubles of the people that we care about.
Right.
Yeah.
But isn't that a starting place? Because otherwise, it's just sending beings. There's not that same kind of warmth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just masses of people, and I don't know how to.
Yeah. So if to prevent it from being masses of people, you want to do the equanimity meditation, and then seeing all sentient beings as your mother. Then remembering their kindness, so that you're including all sentient beings in this whole thing of seeing them as lovable. Okay? You know? Or seeing that all sentient beings have been kind to you. It's not just your parents who've been kind to you, but the road workers and the garbage man and the, you know, all these other people who've been so kind to you. So instead of just getting fixated on two people, remembering the kindness of a large number of people as individuals. So if you want to keep it from just being this vague mass that you don't relate to, think of other people that you know. Because it's not like your parents are the only one who's suffering. Because remember, there's three kinds of suffering. Okay? The first kind is the suffering of pain. That's what your parents are going through. But everybody else has that sometime during the day too. Yeah, but there's also, you know, the dukkha of change and the pervasive compounded dukkha. And think about sentient beings having that. And think about your parents having that. Don't just get stuck in the out suffering, you know. Because the out suffering, it's just an out suffering for a short time, you know. The physical pain that you experience, it's not limitless. It ends. Yeah, the worst thing that people are going through is the fact of being under the control of afflictions and karma. That's a much more severe situation. Because by being under the control of afflictions and karma, then they're going to continually create more and more causes for rebirth and more causes for the ouch kind of dukkha. So that pervasive compounded suffering, or pervasive compounded, that's much more serious, really. Yeah? So, you know, and that's why I don't agree with always talking about suffering, because then we only think people are suffering when they have physical pain or when they have mental pain. And, yeah, physical pain and mental pain stink, but that's not the worst thing that's happening to us. Because you can recover from your physical and mental pain and be happy, but by being under the influence of afflictions and karma, then the whole thing's just going to happen again. Yeah? So we really have to open our minds and broaden our perspective. Yeah? Otherwise, we degenerate into this kind of weepy compassion for everybody's physical suffering. And we have compassion for people who have physical suffering, but then for the politicians and the CEOs and the people in the military, for these people we have no compassion until they get wounded, then we have compassion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense. Why do we have compassion just because somebody experiences, ouch, pain? You know, compassion has to be much more stable and broader spread than that, and really looking at what is the real difficulty in people's lives. Yeah? And then similarly, seeing all sentient beings as lovable. Yeah? Instead of just getting hooked in by a few people in this life, who, of course, our parents have been kind to us in this life, and we want to help them, and we feel grateful to them, but we can't get where just our mind is like knotted around a couple of people, because what about everybody else who's been our parents? What about everybody else, many of whom have suffering far greater than our parents' suffering is? Yeah? Are you seeing what I'm talking about? Yeah? So really kind of, yeah? Think about the turkeys. Really, seriously, I look at the turkeys. My goodness. Would you want to be born as a turkey? I mean, imagine having that rebirth and being stuck in that kind of body with the total inability to think. You know, so difficult. Sometimes you even go out to feed them and they don't understand that you're feeding them. You know? And just so, you know, like they were having something happen this afternoon. I don't know, you know. Maybe they were having their what do you call it, their primaries. So they were out doing their campaigning at the last minute for who was going to get the Democratic and Republican nomination for the turkeys.
The flock of Republicans showed up.
Is that what happened?
Another group that showed up.
Oh.
Another 5 males and 2 or 3 females.
Oh, so they were already at the election. Who was going to be in charge here? Yeah. I see. Okay. But where was I? But imagine just being born as a turkey. I mean, my goodness. And here you are at the Abbey. Here you are so close to the Buddha statue, can't even recognize it as a Buddha. You know? Can't even know to create merit with it. You know, can't even know anything. Yeah? And how do you get out of that kind of rebirth when it's so difficult in the mind to create any virtuous thought? You know? And then just running around all the time and, you know? Yeah? So, you know, if you're thinking of everything the turkeys did today, that's exactly like politics in an office. You know, when you get involved in politics in your workplace, just think, we're like a flock of turkeys. You know? This is exactly the same thing. You know? Same thing. Yeah? So they're talking turkey. We're talking English. But the meaning is the same. You know, I'm right, the other guy better get out of here. You know, it's just we make it much more complicated than that. So we think we're more intelligent, but I don't know that that's the case. Yeah. What else is happening? Yeah?
I don't need to have fun. No, I had this experience. It was quite fun. I'd been inside, seemed like, for days, and I went walking and ended up sledding down the hill. And it was lovely to be out. I got a lot of exercise, but I was quite joyful. But then this morning, I was like, well, you know, I should be more reserved, or I was by myself. I just had this reflection afterwards that my mind was really very happy. I wasn't, you know, it was done.
Good.
But it felt good to be
out. Good. So. Nothing wrong with being happy.
But it's funny, I'm, you know, just watching my mind, like, oh, I had somehow this judgment of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay, that's...
Yeah. No, you walk up there and you slide down and you dedicate it for all other sentient beings. Yeah? And may all the happiness I feel doing this, may all other sentient beings feel this.
I had this great thought. I came down from the land. I mean, I kept going because it was all done. And I realized I went through, I was on a NASA call. I was going to see the little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There he went, right through the bedroom.
It was really beautiful, too, being out in the night.
Yeah.
It was kind of stunning. And, the land is just so gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's really good that people get out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when it's sunny, make sure you get out.
Well, I've been having a pretty good time, actually, and I know I'm distracted in the hall. I'm distracted all the time, but I feel hopeful about noticing it and catching it and coming back sooner than I used to. And I think what I'm experiencing is the effect of the Vajrasattva retreat. Like some fruits of that, this is so much more joyful and easy, and even the hard parts are easier. I don't know how to explain that, but I guess it's because I expect them. In Vajrasattva, I don't know what was happening. I look back, wow, it's that hard work. But and we were very joyful then too. But there's something now, like just kind of knowing, like it goes like this and like that.
Yeah.
And I had a really wonderful meditation yesterday, and then I labeled it wonderful, and then I got really excited, and I was like, and of course the next one was horrible. It was just horrible. I couldn't think of anything. I felt asleep. I kept trying not to fart. The lowest was the lowest. I read in Shinamaran Pudin's book about calming the mind that the minute you label it as good meditation, you've blown it. And I saw that because I grabbed right at it. It's like, oh, that's good. Now I'm going to do that every time. But I just really feel the effects of that Bhaktivinoda retreat. I just feel the effects of it very deeply.
Yeah.
Something got out of the way. You know, some big chunk of bodily aches and pains and that kind of thing. And you know, so I'm kind of working with that book a lot that you recommended, and you know, it's hard to get to use. And it's a lot about the main thing about distraction, and then this too loose, too tight.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is I thought I was just looking at that in meditation. And then as I've been off the cushion, I see that whole theme in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when I'm mopping the floor, I can get really tight about mopping the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But then I get really loose, like, oh, I don't care, you know, I'm not going to go into there, you know. I get really tight, like, oh, I'm going to get everything out of the corner, and I'm moving cords. And I just watch myself do this all
day, yeah.
Everything. So it's really fascinating. I'm really enjoying it.
And what's nice is, you know, you're seeing how sometimes you're too loose and sometimes you're too tight, not only in meditation, but also in your daily life actions. But what's changed is you're not judging yourself about it. That's what's changed is, oh, yeah, I'm too loose. Oh, look at me. Oh, I'm too tight. Oh, look at me. But you're not, oh, I'm too loose. Oh, God, I'll never get anything accomplished. I always do this. I'm useless. Oh, I'm too tight. No, I'm so neurotic. You know, no wonder I'm too tight. You know, it's just you're seeing it.
Yeah.
And then knowing, okay, I need to get some balance in here. But you're not judging yourself. Yeah. And I think that's what makes the retreat so much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because all that self-judgment isn't there.
Yeah.
Okay. What's happening?
Oh, dear. Well, as far as my meditation method. Well, it's been interesting because I have a few things to obsess about, and I did something interesting the other day. Is I figured I kind of surrendered and said, "All right, if I'm going to think about it, I'm just going to think about it all day, and I'm not going to stop thinking about it. Even when I want to stop, I'm not going to stop." Because I don't have a home, well, I don't have a place, really. I mean, I have places to stay, and that's, you know, but I don't have residence right now, and I don't have any idea where I'm going to be in the spring, or what I'm going to choose for my life, and that's huge right now. So, that's huge, like, to plan, but I don't even know where my mind's going to be at in 2 months, so, anyway. Useless to plan because I have no idea if I want to. Anyway, so I did that, and then I made the pact that the next day I was going to practice. That
you
I
were gonna
my practice, keep practice, give myself 1 day of indulgence, and then the next day I was going to just start with my breath and look at my breath as kind of, I just read this book, a hot cup of coffee that I'm going through a crowd of people with. And I don't want to spill it on anybody. The crowd of people are all my ideas and thoughts, but I'm going to keep my mind on that cup of coffee and not spill it. And it went so well. It just, yesterday and today has just been phenomenal. And like today, I went outside, and it's just been phenomenal how much it worked. And how much space I have now.
Mm-hmm.
Like a little bit this afternoon, the third sit, this afternoon, I went back to, you know, lay life, you know, like this, and there was so much more space than 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable. And I just think, wow, if I do this like the whole retreat, mm-hmm. then when I'm out of retreat, what will that be like? So it was just, I've had just mm-hmm. now, I've had kind of the breakthrough. But I have had the opposite, and I don't know. And this always happens with me, except for Manju Shri for some reason, because he has a sword, and I like the sword, but I'm a very auditory person, and I like donuts, and I really can focus. Like right now, my breath, it kind of came pretty easily once I had the determination to do it. But when I get into the visualizations, I don't know, I'm a 80s generation movie watcher, video gamer, you know, and I think that it ignites that in me, honestly, that I just start going into these movies and video games in my mind that, in, like, I'm a character in my video games, but that I can't, it ignites that for me, but if I just don't do the visualizations and stick with the mantra, or just the breath, then, like, today, I mean, it just
Okay, so some people, you know, they've done experiments. Some people learn better through hearing, some people by visual means, and some people by kinesthetic, by doing things. Yeah. So I think, you know, if you're more of an auditory person, then the visualization maybe can go a bit in the background and you try and focus more on the mantra and the energy of the mantra, you know? So it doesn't mean don't visualize at all. You might think of the sound of the mantra manifesting as the image of Medicine Buddha. Yeah? So think that it's sound just becoming the Medicine Buddha. Okay? And see if that helps you with the visualization. But it's fine if you feel like that the mantra, it helps you settle your mind more to pay more attention to that. Yeah? But it can be very... What you're doing in visualizing the Medicine Buddha, because it might seem like it's also sparking all your other visualizations and your movies and things like that, is what you're doing is you're using that tendency to visualize to combat the tendency to visualize. Because our usual tendency to visualize is visualizing, you know, stupidaggios, you know. It was one word in Italian I never forgot. It means stupid things, you know. Okay, so usually, you know, we can go off on all these visual things about saying, you know, you're going back to Portland and you're homeless with your backpack, you know, where am I going to live, and on and on. You know, you're visualizing all the time. So here, when you're, yeah, we are, aren't we? We're making movies all the time. So here, you're just making a different movie, but one with the Medicine Buddha. So instead of making a movie that, you know, has, you know, yeah, where am I going to live? And I could live here and there. I could go here and there and that. And you're, and that kind of, you know, movie, I mean, it doesn't get us anywhere. Yeah. So then you make a movie with the Medicine Buddha. And that's much nicer. Yeah. You hang out with the Medicine Buddha for a while. And he's there and light's coming and, you know, purifying you and inspiring you, and then the Medicine Buddha dissolves into you, and yeah, and it's much nicer. I mean, Medicine Buddha is a really good friend. You don't have to sit there and, you know, oh God, you know, I have to call him back, otherwise he's going to be mad at me. You know? Maybe I said the wrong thing to Medicine Buddha. The relationship's over. Oh, he's looking at Nan across the room. Medicine Buddha's not going to come to my visualizations anymore. You know, too involved with her. You know. Okay. Okay. So it's you're usually using the tendency to visualize, but you're doing it in a really good way. Yeah.
Maybe it's okay to put it on the back burner if it's creating distraction for now. Like you can build up to it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, still do it, but you don't have to, don't make your mind tight about it. Yeah. And when you're at the part where you're doing the mantra, you can just focus more on the mantra and less on the visualization. That's fine. But at the beginning part, when you're doing the prayers and everything like that, try and do the visualization then, because that will help you.
Because I think I hear a word for feeling. Like when we do four measurables, you don't have a feeling of all things being the one where I'm in the presence of those Buddhas, the different names. Mm-hmm. I feel how does melodious ocean bring down Dharma feel
You want to feel like you're in their presence. It's the same thing. You might be looking at me, but you're thinking more of the, you know, you're getting a feeling content when you look at people. The fact that your feeling content means more to you doesn't mean that you close your eyes when you walk around and, you know. So the same thing in your meditation. You don't block out the visualization simply because, you know, the saying the prayers and the thought and the feeling speaks to you more. You know, you still keep that. Okay, you just don't have to emphasize it as much. Anybody else?
Well, I'll speak. I'm finding that I'm wanting to kind of laugh or chuckle at more than usual times. And the turkeys are good. I mean, I just look at their tracks in the snow and where they've gone, and I just think it's so funny. Or actually, sometimes. There's the prayer we have, or the prayer that we do. And there's one line in it just struck me as funny. Like, just the way my mind took it, I'm sure. But I just thought that's kind of nice, you know, to feel that. Or the cats are always good to laugh. But as far as, you know, always guessing and that, yeah, and having a really good meditation, and then the next time I can't even get the request going, I'm going off somewhere. But I found I had this, what I thought was brilliant idea. I had all my five fingers, and if it was something to do with me fantasizing about what to do after, because I don't know what I'm going to do either, that would be my little finger. I would wiggle that. If it was something to do with myself, putting myself down, that would be the next one. This next one here would be, I don't know, anger or something, which is a big one. So I'm using it on my fingers to try and get back. I think that what's been really bothering me since I found out I had to lead a session is really trying to pay attention to the times that everybody used, you know, rings the bell, what am I going to say? And then I thought I was going to be doing this on the Lam Rim, and it turns out my Lam Rim is an older version, so it's going to be a different one. Anyway, and then fitting my life into it. So I have actually done so much work on myself, thinking about what I'm going to say. It's absolutely beneficial. I wish I would have written some of them down. You know, I'm sure I won't be able to come up with them tomorrow. I don't know what I'll come up with tomorrow, but some of that stuff. And I was going to say, I don't know what this sounds like, but it's almost like I feel safe in the gomp, I call it, or in the hall there. I feel really safe there. I feel like I can deal with what I'm doing. For me, the hard part of the retreat is coming out. You know, my latest example was having a shower, and well, I was going to have it in that room, and it was due at 3 days, and the massage was going on. Well, I'm going downstairs. I'm not supposed to go downstairs. I get told off for going downstairs.
Oh, what a terrible thing. Did you hear what she did? You can have a shower wherever you want.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
Snow, I love the snow. Like, the snow is so different all the time. And, like, I'm going out, step up, Jamie's, oh, beckon me. As I'm going to the porta potty. I'm going to the porta potty. And I was just And I'm thinking, oh, if I get a body like me, what if I get lost? But I need it. And when I came back, there was so much snow on the front of the like, grandma's all snow. And, so yeah, no, things are not perfect, and like I'm all my, you know, my worst, and I feel like I'm in a strange point of part of my life because I've retired and things that made my life meaningful are not there anymore, and wow, you know. So.
You have a whole new opportunity to find a much deeper meaning in your life.
Yeah. But you know, despite that it is hard, it feels really good to be in a really enjoy. You know, bare feet, sorry, running onto the car. My feet are on my scarf, my coat, and Carl was up there in bare feet. And I said, wow. And I just appreciate that joyfulness that they have.
Don't like taking my shoes off.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just thinking that my energy field probably intruded on you. You probably caught my anxiety because a couple of days ago I was meeting and I don't know, I was so anxious the first time because I did do check and see. And I agree with Kathleen, it's just a hugely helpful. Has done a huge treat previously. I feel like I'm mitigating and disciplined just so much faster. But I was really anxious. I think it's because of my confession, actually. Because I don't really like to talk about personal things, but I disclosed, you know, what I did to you, because I brought him to the retreat, and so I had to tell everybody. That kind of threw me off. And anyway, I just rushed. We had half an hour left. That's a good record. But, you know, we all have energy fields, and of course, Sharon is right next to me, so I think that. Anyway, just about that. But I wish also, if we had a community meeting, that you could be with us someday and hear how quiet, I mean, experience how quiet
really?
It is. Yes, it's just wonderful.
Oh, very good. Very good. Okay.
Tell us.
So you show up?
I don't know. To me, I sound very loud. But I'm also just like flipping the pages. Like, I don't really. Because to me, it's excruciating to go. Or with the zipper, when people do their zipper and they do one little click. it's just like a band-aid. Just rip the thing off.
Yes,
and
it's
all over. Nobody has to worry about it anymore. It's not quite what it meant to them, but. That's what I do with them. No, everything's just a band-aid.
Well, I don't hear anybody complaining. Is anybody complaining?
I said, Carl, you're the closest one to you, if that makes any sense. I don't hear anything. You're on the opposite side. You are actually closer than
that. Okay, yeah?
This isn't exactly about being in the hall, but I had this whole thing today where my allergies are kind of, they'll be kind of like, my allergy medication will work really well, and then I'll have a day where it kind of won't. And today, like, I really couldn't breathe, and had to leave during breakfast, and like, or gave me the treatment, which was very helpful, but just, I noticed, like, there was the physical aspect that was really, really uncomfortable, but then there was also like this whole mental, like I noticed later that I had added all this mental suffering on to the pre-existing physical suffering, which, because I was having trouble breathing, like, I was getting more stressed out, and then, therefore, like, my mental suffering was physically making it harder for me to breathe, like the mental storage. It didn't last as long as it usually can. Like, I could sort of stop the mental storage sooner, but it was still, like, and so I'm happy about the mental stories, like, of, oh, this is so horrible, and I can't be happy because I can't breathe, and I'm happy that ended sooner, but it's still, like, so it's just so difficult to get through the whole, like, even just, I realize, just getting to actually feeling the physical suffering, and not saying, like,
Yeah, well, remember I spoke about that just recently, wasn't it? I was talking about how we have something physical and then our mind just spins off around it. So you're saying that that's what happened, and you saw really how much the spinning of the mind kept you, I mean, made the physical suffering worse, but it also made you, you said that you couldn't even focus on the physical suffering.
I was noticing that later afterwards, like, it had been really hard to breathe, and so I was really constricted, but I noticed afterwards that I had all this tension in my back, from, like, and I hadn't even noticed the tension in my back until I was calmed down.
Yeah, and that tension in your back was probably making the feeling of not breathing, Yeah, I mean, when that happens, I mean, everybody understands, so just don't worry about it. Do what you need to do. Yeah, and if there's a way we can do it to prevent, you know, because like I was saying, I don't think the cats go into the pink room so much.
It's usually, like, in the hall I'm fine, and for most of the day I'm fine. I've noticed that the table, the cats, like, all of them fall in love with me.
Yeah,
I'm just different. Yeah, it's just on my chair, so he doesn't want to sit on it. But
then he sits next to me. Exactly. And that's, like, on every meal.
And so I go to
the
eat. And, like, I was feeling fine.
Until you're sitting next to
Asha.
Thank you.
I can pick them up.
Yeah. Yeah. Or sit on another part of the table. Or,
yeah. Beautiful watching the snow blowing sideways.
I also found it a little bit almost funny as I was walking down, because I was just, like, taken by the comical, almost absurdity of just probably walk in and be like, I didn't have my hat or anything, and I was, like, blowing the night.
Okay, so let's sit quietly.